Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in, the one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Welcome back to the Junkyard Dogcast, everybody. I'm Jake Rowe with Dogs 24/7. With me, Kip Adams and Rusty Mansell of Dogs 24/7, Deep South's oldest rivalry edition. You're going to get our picks today. You're going to get who we think for Georgia has a chance to really play well on the plains Saturday. We're going to sprinkle in a little bit of Laramie Tunsil talk. That's something that Rusty has kind of teased over at the Dogs 24/7 Junkyard.
Oh, man.
Little bit of an oldie, but I'm sure Rusty's going to bring the fire on that. Man. And pretty much this episode is going to be focused around Georgia Auburn. But Rusty, I know you're probably a little nervous having to come to the mic on this one.
I mean, I'm going to be about 30-40 minutes into it. I have a feeling that I'm probably going to have a surge. So if I lose y'all on signal, y'all can just hit me back next week on that.
Sounds good. Let's just dive right into this thing, because we got a lot of Georgia Auburn we want to talk as far as this one goes. This was one of those weeks where we would normally maybe try to fit three shows in, because there's just so much to talk about, but schedules didn't line up for us this week, but we're getting this thing out to you guys in plenty of time to kind of catch the morning drive on Friday and have all Friday to listen to it. Rusty, starting with you, we all have, when we did the podcast on Sunday, we all had a thought about this game. Everybody did. And everybody's thinking usually changes as the week goes on. How have your thoughts on this game progressed as the week has moved on?
Not really a lot of difference. I look at kind of matchups, because, Gus Malzahn presents a different type of offense. He is a different, I'm not going to say he's a Paul Johnson offense. I'm not trying to say it, but he is a unique running offense. There's a lot of wing T to this, with a lot of different motions and that type of thing. He is a fast pace. You watch Auburn after they get a first down, they're on the line of scrimmage. Kirby Smart has seen this at Alabama. Kirby Smart has seen this at Georgia. I was there. Jake, you were there. November 11th, 2017 at Jordan-Hare, Georgia got a beat down, and I'm talking it was 40-17. It wasn't even remotely that close. Past the first drive, Georgia got beat down. And in history, it came back and, a little bit less than a month later, came back and beat them. Now, when I look at this matchup, knowing what Kirby Smart and those guys and how they've attacked this, this offense of Gus Malzahn, you look at 2017, Auburn goes right down the field. 2016, Auburn goes right down the field in Georgia, scores. That was it. Georgia beats them 13-7. SEC championship, they come right down the field, score 7-0. Georgia outscores them 28-7. Last year, right down the field in Athens, score. Georgia outscores them 27-3 the rest of the game. So I feel like Georgia has a good pulse on what they're trying to do based off those numbers. So that's three out of four games that they, one touchdown and done in three of the four games. Georgia's got a great defense. Auburn has a great defense. I think this game comes down to quarterback play, and we make our picks later in the game. later in this podcast. I just feel like that's going to be a big advantage, but I also feel like Kirby Smart and what I'm seeing on paper has a pretty good pulse on how he plays Gus Malzahn and what he's done to him to be successful.
Yeah, I look back. I went back and watched, you know, just kind of early part of some Auburn games, the 40-17 beat down. I went all the way back to 2014 when they came to Athens and did the same thing, scored early, and Georgia scored 34 unanswered. Happened again in 2015. They only scored one touchdown in that game. So, you know, and I know those weren't Kirby Smart coach teams, but the point still stands.
Yeah, as a Jeremy Pruitt. I mean, what tree are they from?
Yeah, no doubt. Very similar.
It's a very good point, Jake. And Jeremy Pruitt and Kirby Smart both would attack Auburn the same way. Just right now, Kirby Smart's got better personnel, but that's a great point. And they're same tree, same attack. I just really feel like that Kirby Smart has seen this enough that this is how they're going to try to attack it.
And the funny thing is, it happened in 2017, too. I mean, sorry, not 2011. That Auburn came down, scored early, Georgia routed them from there on out. And listen, we're not trying to say that's what's going to happen, but you go back and you look at that and you look at some of those drives, and you've got to think that over the years, whether it's been at Alabama or whether it's been at Georgia, Kirby Smart's seen it. I mean, there's only so much you can do offensively, and I'm not saying that Gus doesn't have some tricks he can pull out, you know, and stuff like that, but you got to think that Kirby has seen the entire kitchen sink at this point. And that's something I think favors Georgia a little bit. Kip, Sunday to now, kind of how has your thinking around this game kind of moved for you? How has it kind of progressed?
Well, just kind of looking at the national narrative here, the big question mark when people are trying to pinpoint why Georgia might, you know, not why not they might not be able to pull this off. You know, they talk about, you know, what Georgia is going to not like, their struggles offensively, basically, how Auburn's defense is going to create a lot of mismatches and issues for them. But when I look at the other side, you know, how is Auburn going to be able to get into the 20s against Georgia? You look at Bo Nix, again, a freshman quarterback being asked to do a lot. He's been pretty solid this year. But, you know, when you look at the better defenses he's faced, when you look at, you know, Oregon, Florida, LSU, he hasn't completed 42% of his passes. He's at 41.9, you know, four touchdowns versus six interceptions in those games. And those are, you know, those are good quality defenses that I think Georgia's in that class as well, based on what their defense has done this year. Now, granted, we know the competition has been, you know, up and down for what Georgia's had to face in the field, but you can't, you know, you don't have a role in that. You have to line up against whoever, you know, is playing against you. And Georgia's defense has played stout the whole season. And you look at Auburn's offense, everyone's pointing to Anthony Schwartz. I know him well. I'm well aware of his, you know, future Olympic track speed that he presents out there. But if you're pointing to him as their big play guy, he's still not averaging 14 yards a touch. It's still 13 and a half. He's not doing something that George Pickens hasn't been able to do. Dominic Blaylock hasn't been able to do. I mean, Dominic Blaylock's averaging over 17 yards a touch. Now, granted, he's only had 12 touches, but he's still been that guy after the catch. And then Lawrence Cager is averaging almost 15 yards a touch. So Georgia has comparable weapons, and I don't think Auburn can really push the ball downfield. I mean, the plays to Anthony Schwartz, you know, you see a lot of end arounds, see a lot of those, you know, they're screening, they're trying to get him the ball near the line of scrimmage and allowing him to hit that angle. And so, you know, teams are not really worried about him downfield so much as him is getting that angle and getting outside of them. Now, obviously, Seth Williams has been pretty great for them this year. But, you know, overall, looking at that offense, I have a lot of questions for Auburn, especially in the run game. Booby Whitlow is still, you know, coming back from injury. Freshman DJ Williams has been pretty good. But the rushing attack, I mean, they've been at their best when they have that 1,000-yard rusher. I think they had that, you know, they went like 6 years, 7 years having a 1,000-yard rusher. In the last couple of years, you know, they have struggled to really have that formidable rushing attack. And Gus Malzahn's offense, it just doesn't work quite the same when they don't have that, you know, dependable running back there. And I'm looking to see if DJ Williams is ready for that big stage, if he's ready to be that guy for them yet in a big game like this. Because so far this year, it really hasn't come together for them offensively. And I think that you'd help Bo Nix out a lot if you had that, but they just really have not had that so far this year. So that's really what I've seen this week. How is Auburn going to break the 20-point plateau with the offense they have to put on the field this weekend?
You know, there are a lot of different ways to look at this game. Obviously, Auburn has the bye, and they're playing in Jordan-Hare Stadium, which is, I mean, two big advantages there. And but at the same time, I mean, it's nothing new. I mean, yeah, Auburn hasn't had the bye week before Georgia, but having a team, playing teams with a bye week in front of you, that's something Georgia's real familiar with this year. They've done it four times. Now, they've had the bye week on two of those occasions, so it's really helped. But you know, so that was what I was kind of focused on early in the week. And then as the week's gone on, I've kind of fallen into a little bit different mode, and that's just Georgia's depth. And not just the depth on, not just depth in terms of, wow, this roster is really talented. It's the fact that Georgia plays 24 guys on defense. It's the fact they play eight defensive linemen and five outside linebackers and four inside linebackers and, you know, anywhere from six to seven defensive backs on a regular basis. And to me, you know, that gives me a different feeling on this game, because if this does turn into what many are predicting, which is kind of a, you know, two mules fighting over a turnip type thing on offense, then, you know, the team, you know, three and out, back on the field, three and out, back on the field, five and out, back on the field, stuff like that. I think Georgia's a little bit better equipped to handle that because Auburn just doesn't play quite as many guys. Now, listen, I say that with the full knowledge that Auburn's top 14 or 15 guys on defense are as good as anybody. I mean, I've really, you know, I caught a little flack today on the Junkyard when I wrote my Who Has the Edge piece, because I kind of made it a tie between Georgia's defensive backs and Auburn's defensive backs. I have a lot of respect for those guys. Those guys have played a ton of football. I think Christian Tutt's a fantastic football player at Star, and he's the youngest guy in that group, but he's got 20 games under his belt already. I love their safeties, Daniel Thomas and I'm drawing a blank on Jeremiah Denson. So you know that they've got some horses on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, some really good ones, and obviously everybody knows about that defensive line, and that defensive line is a great equalizer. If Georgia's offensive line comes out and plays like it did in 2017, it's a wrap. They're going to smother Georgia offensively, but ultimately I like Georgia's depth, and that's kind of been what I've gotten a little bit more toward as the week has gone on, what I've thought about more, especially as I've gone back and looked at things. And I'll say this too, and I've mentioned this. I mentioned this in our dog treats feature that we do every Monday. I mentioned it on our message board over at Dogs 24/7. I know not everybody's a member over there, but I've said it. Guys, the 2017 game, the Jake Fromms and the Andrew Thomases who really struggled at Auburn 2 years ago, DeAndre Swift, Walter Grant, the senior leadership on this football team, Charlie Warner, They've had this game circled, and that's not to say that they've been thinking about this game during week two or week three of this season, but when the summer was here and those guys were going into meetings together and talking about how they want to lead this football team, that's something they were talking about. And I think that may count for something in this one too. But I'll tell you this, I've got a lot of respect for this Auburn team. Got a lot of respect for Bo Nix, even though he struggled big time. He's a tough kid. And you always like to see the kind of toughness he puts on display from the quarterback position, right up there with your Sam Ellingers and Joe Burrows and Jake Fromms and Tua Tagovailoa's in terms of just how stinking tough they are and how competitive they are, and not quite on those guys' level with experience yet. But I definitely, you know, like this Auburn team a lot, but Georgia's depth has kind of been more on my mind as the week has gone on. Let's take our break early on. And we'll come back on the other side, and we're going to let Rusty give a little nugget on the whole Laramie Tunsil recruitment. It's something he's been kind of teasing for a while, and give him a second to think about it before he jumps right into that.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
All right, Rusty, Judgment Day, August 29th. I can't remember what year it was in the movie, but I just remember the date was August 29th. August 29th, 1987, something like that. I can't remember in the Terminator movie, but it's time, man. You ain't got to spill the whole bucket full of beans.
I can't spill a can. I can't spill the whole bucket because that wouldn't be good for me or anybody. You know, this is talked about a lot, and we both covered this. All three of us covered this deal until Trevor Lawrence came along. I said that Laramie Tunsil was the best high school player I've ever seen. I watched him work out at camp for Mike Bobo and Will Friend one day back when we could go to camps, which I know that was a long, long time ago. Watched him work out one morning, the first time I'd saw him. And then I went down to the Georgia-Florida game, I believe 2012, maybe 2011, the Malcolm Mitchell touchdown year. And the night before, I went to see Laramie play. And I just remember, you know, I knew he was very talented, but getting in a stance, I remember, you know, a left tackle getting in a stance. I've never seen somebody with that bend more comfortable than he was.
Hey, we were both there, weren't we?
Sure, might have been.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we were. Yeah, the night before the Georgia Florida game, I'm 99% sure we were both there.
And he was just demolishing.
Yeah, he was nasty.
It was poor, some poor kid, and they tried to.
He got called for holding twice that night just because he just thumbed up, thumbed down the guy.
His arm out, just extended on the guy. But getting where I'm at, you know, the Georgia fans and the way that turned at the end. You know, the very last week, I'll take everybody back. So it was a week before signing day. Georgia had their last in-home, the very last one, their last in-home on Wednesday. So it's Mark Richt, it's Will Friend, Mike Bobo, Brian McClendon, I believe, are there. There was an ice storm in Atlanta. So here's where things – this part didn't affect – the decision, but here's where things got weird, because Mark Richt was down at Laramie Tunsil's that morning. He flew to Atlanta to be with Alvin Kamara to get their last in-home with him, and he was going to fly back to Jacksonville to finish it. They were unable to get back, so Mark Richt got to spend the morning with Laramie and didn't get a chance to get back because of the storm. So it was really a crazy deal that day. And that didn't have anything to do with it, but it's kind of like, man, that things started working against Georgia a little bit. Well, that Thursday, I will not say a name, but I will say a friend that we all know, a guy that's in this business, a guy that covers the state for another company, was at the school in Jacksonville. I was going to go down on Friday morning and get our last interview. He had agreed to give us all one last interview before he made his decision on ESPN. The following Wednesday. So that Thursday, somebody that I talked to a lot was there. It was Ole Miss's day. It was Hugh Freeze, Chris Kiffin, and a few Ole Miss guys. They got their day. Well, that morning, Laramie is walking by those coaches, and he tells this reporter, who I absolutely trust, he goes, man, you come here. I don't even want to talk to those guys. I don't even want to talk to those guys, meaning the Ole Miss staff. Goes in, does his interview, hangs out with him for a few minutes. Laramie literally leans to him and says, man, don't leave. I'd rather just hang out here. And this guy's like, I've got to go. I'm going to another school. So kind of leaves. That's roughly 10, 11 o'clock that morning. So at that point, probably not feeling like Georgia still, because Georgia had a heck of a visit. I know they did. Had a really long day. They were there all the way to midnight, basically. Friday morning, I'm getting ready to leave to go to Jacksonville to get our last interview that night. that afternoon. I believe he had a basketball game. He was going to get the last visit before. Get a call and basically said, it's over. He's going to Ole Miss. And I said, are you sure? And he said, yeah, the kid's going to Ole Miss. So J.C. Sherbert, who was working as one of our national guys at the time, was doing Bill King in Nashville. I'll never forget. It was about 6:45 that morning. And he was doing the morning show with Bill King. And I called JC and I said, hey, I got some news for you. And he said, what is it? And I said, call me during the break. I texted him, call me during the break. He calls me. And I said, the kid's going to Ole Miss. And he goes, how sure? I said, he's going to Ole Miss. Best sources I've got, he's going to Ole Miss. So at that point, JC puts it out. And then all you know what breaks loose on every major board, you know, the sources are telling us the kid's leaned to Ole Miss, he's going to Ole Miss, that type of thing. All heck break loose for about 3 days. I'll get into Tuesday. Tuesday is the Tuesday before National Signing Day. At that point, Georgia's staff was back in touch with Laramie. You know, he was at school and was back in touch with him and some different things. Now, here's where it gets. You got to kind of put pieces together, you know, and I don't necessarily know all the answers there, but I do know that John Lilly, who is now the tight end coach for the Browns, was the lead recruiter there with Will Friend and Mike Bobo, and all those guys were knee deep in this one. I mean, they were recruiting a kid for 2 years. John Lilly stayed on the phone with Laramie Tunsil till about 3 o'clock in the morning on signing day. And basically, the kid told him, "I'm coming to Georgia. I'm going to sign tomorrow. I need you to talk to my mom." And Lily's like, "Let's get her on the phone." And for whatever reason, she wouldn't get on the phone. So she tells Laramie, you know, at one point, this is from another good source. She tells Laramie, "Listen, I'll talk to them in the morning. Let's all go to bed. It's late, two or 3 o'clock in the morning." Now, National Signing Day that Wednesday. And Laramie, you know, basically on the phone with the Georgia staff the entire night. They take a time, an hour by hour. It's Mike Bobo for an hour. It's Will Friend for an hour. It's John Lilly, 2 hours. It's back to talk to Mark Rick. I mean, they're working him all night. He's on the phone with them all night long. Mom says, let's go to bed. We'll talk to him in the morning. He commits around 3 o'clock that afternoon, if I remember correctly. Doesn't go to school. Georgia never hears from him again. Obviously, mom didn't call. She gets into school about 2:45. He goes on the air about 3:15, committed to Ole Miss. So it was a crazy Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but the Tuesday was what was really, really wild, you know, because basically Georgia thought they had him back. And, you know, from when I'm here, you know, the kid was, coach, I want to go to Georgia. You've got to talk to my mom. I want to go to Georgia. Just didn't work out. I do know the night that he silently committed was the night of the state championship games when Alvin Kamara and those guys were playing in the Georgia Dome championship game. Bunch of Georgia staffers there, and all of a sudden the guys on the sideline start high-fiving, looking at their phones, and I ask a guy, I said, find out what they're, you know, what's going on there. And the guy kind of talks to one of them. He said, hey, you know, and this guy, trust them, I trust them. And he said, yeah, the kid from Florida just silently committed to him on a text. So, you know, he was committed from mid-December on. And look, silent commits don't mean anything. That happens all the time. But the kid was a silent commit from about mid-December until about 6 days before signing day is when they realized he was going to Ole Miss on that Friday. But you know, a Thursday morning, you look at things Thursday morning, doesn't really want to be around anybody. It's Ole Miss's day. Friday morning, it's a done deal. He's going to Ole Miss, and Georgia was never able to turn it around. But listen, there's a million different stories from different angles. The sources I got that from, I trust. And, you know, I'm not insinuating anything. I'm just telling you what happened, and Georgia almost got him back in the end, but there's no point for second place. I say it all the time.
Well, you don't have to insinuate a whole lot. There's a lot that came out on draft night. More than just a gas mask.
My side. And look, again, that cost that kid to be a, you know, a top two or three pick. I mean, he was the best high school football, most athletic big guy I've ever seen. He's still in the league, but that deal that came out, and you saw the text messages between the dad and the mom and the boyfriend. I mean, the boyfriend, the mom, and Ole Miss staff. I mean, it was a mess. But when you peel everything back, Laramie Tunsil was a hell of a high school player. He was a great college player, and I think if he stays healthy, he's going to be a great NFL player for a long time. He was ridiculous to see how flexible a big human being is.
Yeah, he's doing a really good job with the Texans there. Maybe has kind of changed things for them on the offensive side, especially with Deshaun Watson, you know, not having the pass protection he's needed for the past couple years. But yeah, that one was crazy. Let's switch gears, get back into Georgia Auburn here, and all right, old timer, new timer, it's time for that. Rusty, or actually, let's go to you, Kip. Let's give Rusty a break a little bit. His mouth might be dry right now from having to explain all that. Give me your old timer, new timer to click in this game against Auburn.
All signs point to this being just a slugfest. I mean, the line of scrimmage obviously is front and center in this game. You know, both teams have had outstanding play. Auburn's got that incredible duo of Marlon Davidson and Derek Brown. Georgia's got this offensive line that's huge and just, you know, it's been outstanding in pass protection so far this year. When I look at that, you know, it points to me that I think that the key in this game is going to come down to the quarterback play. I think that you look at Jake Fromm, and you know that just like they had the stat that he hadn't won a game and that he's had to throw 30 or more passes, you know, that stat, you knew that he was aware of it, and obviously he was able to get that done this year as far as being able to win a game where you had to throw that many times. But then the other stat that gets mentioned with him a lot is those SEC West, you know, those road games. The 46% completion percentage, throwing a pair of interceptions. The games he's played at Auburn and at LSU are games that he obviously would have liked to have had back or had an opportunity to perform better. And when we're getting down to the nitty-gritty, this is, you know, the back end of his junior season, all this discussion about whether he's going to come back and play for his senior year, you know, what is his overall narrative of Georgia going to be? We talked about that before the season. This is that game. This is that game where he gets to kind of, you know, etch his legacy at Georgia. And I think that when you look at that, I think it sets up well for Jake Fromm to come in and have that game, have that statement game for his career. And while it also, you know, when you look at Bo Nix, his tough games have been on the road. He's performed a lot better at home. So I think this game kind of, you know, goes to both quarterbacks. I like Jake Fromm in this game to have a big game. I think that, you know, he is going to be on point. He's going to be dialed in and focused, and he is going to make sure that he's on the same page with his playmakers and get the ball in their hands. So I like Jake Fromm to have a big game. And just staying on that same side, you know, I'll go to the other guy who's going to have a huge spotlight on him in this game for obvious reasons, and that's George Pickens. You know, true freshman wide receiver who flipped from Auburn to Georgia on signing day, you know, breaking the hearts of the Auburn coaching staff and that fan base, and the guy that, you know, they've definitely – kept their eye on since that happened, and they've been waiting for this game. You know, it's his moment to step up. Obviously, Lawrence Cager is going to be a huge factor, but he can't be the only factor for Jake Fromm. I've mentioned, you know, the guys, you know, Dominic Blaylock and Demetrius Robertson, the other playmakers need to be involved, but at the same time, you can't ignore the fact that George Pickens has been their number two guy, and he's had to step up and be that number one guy when Cager was injured. I think this game is a big moment for him, and I think that it's an opportunity for him to become an even bigger villain for the Auburn fan base. And I look at those cornerbacks. They've played pretty solid. I think Auburn is a little bit stronger you know, at safety than they are at cornerback this year, whether it's Javaris Davis, you know, out there. I think he's 5'10", 5'11", pretty physical, but, you know, not the biggest guy. And then you look across from him at Noah Igbinoghene. He's a guy that has had a lot of penalties on him in coverage. When he gets tested downfield, a lot of moments, you know, the flag gets pulled out for him. And so that, you know, that is an opportunity for Georgia to push the ball down the field, take some shots at a guy like George Pickens. Maybe if he doesn't come down with it, you know, they get the penalty and they get some yards. I just think it's a chance for them to attack that defense downfield and really open things up for the rest of the offense and kind of keep that defensive line from being able to pin its ears back and keep that offense unpredictable, pushing the ball downfield would go a long way in doing that. And I think George Pickens is really set up to make one or two big plays down the field as the biggest you know, downfield playmaker in this football game.
All right, Rusty, old timer, new timer.
Y'all know who I want to take from my old timer, but I'm gonna go different this week because I'm locked in for Andrew Thomas forever. So I'm just gonna go old timer B this week. I'm gonna say Rodrigo Blankenship. A game like this, yards are gonna be hard to come by, probably in my opinion. When you get in a red zone, things, you know, gets condensed. These defensive lines are going to create pressure. You know, it's going to come down to, in my opinion, some special teams. I think it'll come down to who can not turn the ball over at a critical moment, who maybe not turn the ball over the entire game. And field goals will be important. Field goals will be important to, you know, to Georgia and Auburn. I think both teams, you know, who can kick, but Rodrigo Blankenship is a guy that I just feel like has made big kicks. He's, you know, look, he missed a kick in the SEC championship last year, but he has been money, you know, and he missed a kick against South Carolina, but you know, there's no other kicker in the country I'd want to trot out there with a game on the line than Rodrigo Blankenship. And, you know, he's been in these big moments. He knocks them down continuously. I just think that Rodrigo is going to come through, maybe three or four more field goals, and Georgia fans might get pissed to hear that. But three or four field goals in a win, you won't get pissed. And I think my newcomer, I agree with Kip, man. I mean, I can't even imagine what's going to be. I know all week they probably preached to George Pickens' composure, and you know, this is not George Pickens versus Auburn, and Kip got that one. So, you know, for my guy, you know, we all look at receivers, we all look at things like that. But you know, where's Tyrique Stevenson this week? You know, I mean, Jake, you didn't get to watch practice any, did you?
Not 1 minute this week.
Okay, so you know, we don't really know if Wilson's ready. You know, Tyrique Stevenson to me, it's a big body guy. You got to be able to tackle in space. They're going to throw a lot of bubbles. They're going to run a lot of reverses. You're going to take on, you know, pulling guards and that type of thing. So that big body in space, you know, I was impressed with what I saw out of him last week for the first time of getting a good sample size of Tyrique Stevenson at money. So, you know, I think you're going to see more reps out of him, and I'll go with him. I'll go my newcomer. I'll go Tyrique Stevenson makes a play that maybe, you know, shuts down a third down. Maybe bats a ball, maybe makes a great tackle in space that saves a lot of yards after contact and keeps them from moving to chains. But, you know, Georgia's all about the size and speed, and you know, for a young player, he's got it.
That's actually a low-key, really good pick. I like that one a lot because he's a guy that's going to be in the game. If Wilson's unable to go, he's going to be in the game on every money down, like every big down, every third and five plus. It's Tyrique Stevenson on the field, and he's going to be matched up on somebody and a couple, two or three pass breakups or a big tackle in space, and he's definitely pulled his own weight in that game. You know, on the offensive side, you know, listen, man, I'm kind of upset because I can tell neither one of you read my stuff, all right, because I wrote a story about Lawrence Cager today. And Lawrence Cager is nasty against the good teams Georgia's played this year. 18 catches for 307 yards against the three best pass defenses on Georgia's schedule, Notre Dame, Florida, and Missouri, and that's in 2.5 games. He didn't even play the second half against Missouri. He had 93 yards receiving. That was with his only drop of the season in that game and didn't even play the second half. He's been phenomenal. So I'm going with Lawrence Cager for my old timer. I really think that he is a good matchup in this game, whether it's against Igbinoga, I'm not even going to try. Whether it's against that guy or whether it's against Davis. I really think the matchup issue is with Davis. Because Notre Dame had a smaller corner. He had a lot of success against that guy. And so I think that's an area where we can really kind of focus in on and see if Georgia's going to try to exploit that mismatch. I wanted to go defense for my young timer, but then I look at a stat for Auburn. And listen, most of these came in the first 2 weeks of the season, but the other ones came last week. And that's the fact that Auburn has allowed 5 punt returns this season of 20 yards or more. 5. That's bad. That's bottom of the country type bad. And like I said, I know most of that was early in the season, but they also did it against Ole Miss as well. I think Dominic Blaylock might be able to get one. And he showed some promise with that last week against Missouri, a team that has done a pretty decent job at covering punts. He was able to kind of bust loose, break a couple tackles. He showed why. You heard so much good stuff about him during the preseason. It's because he is a tough guy to tackle. He's not necessarily just somebody that's going to break somebody's ankles in space, but he's quick. He makes those real last-second sudden movements that keep guys off his legs, and he's able to keep his feet. And that kind of stuff is huge. It really is, and I really expect that he's going to get an opportunity or two in this game to kind of get something going. All right, now, real quick, don't want to spend much time on this at all. You get one phrase. All right, you get one phrase. Georgia wins this game if. All right, let's start with you, Rusty. Georgia wins this game if.
Control the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball.
All right, Kip, Georgia wins this game if.
Jake Fromm's jersey is clean.
All right, Georgia wins this game, and I'm going to go Jake Fromm as well, if Jake Fromm averages more than 8 yards per pass attempt. Georgia's 24-0 when he does that. So I feel pretty good about that one. All right, let's move into the picks, guys. And Kip, I'll start with you, man. What's your pick?
Like I said before, I mean, we've talked about the line of scrimmage. We've talked about, Auburn's defensive line. But I think this game comes down to the quarterback play. Like I said before, I mean, this is the veteran versus, the rookie. And people have pointed out Bo Nix has played better at home than he has on the road. Well, that's true. But who has he played at home? He's played Kent State. He's played Tulane. He's played Ole Miss. He's played Mississippi State. No offense to any of those programs. But these are not teams that we're talking about as having, defensive juggernauts right now. I think it's pretty obvious that Georgia is going to be the best defense that has come to Jordan-Hare so far this season. So, again, it's not out of the realm of expectation to think that Bo Nix is going to have somewhere in that 45 to 50% completion percentage, which is kind of normal under Gus Malzahn's offense, but still. And then, he could have a turnover or two. You flip over to Jake Fromm. I mean, he has been under the microscope as much as any quarterback I think any of us has covered, in our 30-whatever years we've been covering Georgia football. He's been under the microscope more than anyone. And, some points are valid. Some talk about his weaknesses have been blown out of proportion at the same time. At the end of the day, experience does count for something, in my opinion. And that's why I feel pretty good about Georgia's chances in this. I think that James Coley, another person who's been widely discussed this season, I think he has an opportunity to really put Fromm in a position to be highly successful in this game. I think, they've been stubborn sometimes, this year offensively. They should know they're not going to be able to just line up and punch Auburn in the mouth between the tackles and expect a win. I think you'll see them attack the middle. They're going to need to keep them honest. But, again, continuing what they were able to do in that Florida game and continuing to be a little bit more creative on offense, you're going to be able to wear down this Auburn defense, and you're going to be able to do that with tempo. And I'm not saying they're just going to go out there and throw down on a no-huddle offense, but I think we've seen Jake Fromm perform in an up-tempo situation. He does it really well. You know, that quick passing game, if you know, whether it's dumping it off to a back, throwing a screen or two in there, hit some slants, whatever it's possible that he needs to do to get the ball to their playmakers in space. And I think that's what they do in this game. I think that Auburn's defense will be pretty strong early on, but I think that Georgia is going to have an opportunity to continue to wear them down on both sides of the ball. I think Georgia's defensive line will be the difference on that side of the ball just because of that depth. Their ability to rotate guys in, I think it's going to help them in the second half against them. I think that in a game of quarterbacks, Jake Fromm's going to be the one that comes out on top this year. I have Georgia winning 27-17.
You got this thing pegged as a shootout, an absolute shootout, swashbuckling shootout. All right, Rusty, what you got, man?
If you've been to Auburn before, I mean, that place is – it can get as loud as anywhere in the country. They got their video board is ridiculous. Georgia has very experienced players. Jake Fromm's played there. But that being said, it plays a part in the game. The players feed off that energy. I mean, that place can get rocking. I mean, this game's a toss-up to me. I mean, I just feel like that Auburn's got a great defense on the road at Jordan-Hare. I felt good about the matchup against Georgia and Florida when I picked it a 10-point game. I think this game right here is going to come down to who makes that mistake, who makes the mistake in the fourth quarter. I mean, who has the, a tip ball for interception, who puts it on the ground, no telling what could happen in this game. And I really, truly feel this is a toss-up. I mean, this is a coin flip because you're at Auburn. It's such a different atmosphere to play in. I'm going to take Georgia. And I'm going to take Georgia a lot with what, Kip said there. Jake Fromm over Bo Nix a little bit, with a experience and playing in big-time games, playing at Jordan-Hare before. I'm going to take Georgia, but, man, I think it's going to be an absolute just slobber knocker, tough to get anything going. First downs will be hard to come by. I don't think either team's going to run it well. I think it's going to be a defensive game. Between two very, very good defenses. At the end of the day, I'm going to take Georgia 17, Auburn 14.
I had a weird dream about this game the other night. And it's one of those things where when you're around it every day like I am, sometimes it just kind of dominates your thoughts. And I think that's what happened here. And it was that was up in the press box. It was halftime. Neither team had scored. And it come out in the second half, both teams score on the opening drive, score touchdowns on the opening drive. And Claude Felton, Georgia's sports information director, came out and came over and told me. And he never comes over and talks to me during games, all right? So this is just completely wacky. And he said, man, this thing, where were these offenses in the first half? And ever since I've had that dream, I've been thinking, like, I think that's how this game's going to play out a little bit. Now, I don't know if either of these teams shut each other out in the first half. But I think scoring is going to be tough to come by. I think both teams get it going a little bit in the second half, but I think Georgia gets it going a little bit more. I really like the Jake Fromm to Lawrence Cager thing, and I think that him staying healthy for this entire game is going to be critical. I do think that if he gets banged up like he did against Missouri, he's probably going to come back into the game unlike he did against Missouri. So I do believe that's there. Another thing, defense travels, man. Defense travels. Georgia plays a lot of guys. And you know, I know that Auburn's coming off a bye week. I still think Georgia's going to be fresh defensively. I think Georgia's going to have a lot of options defensively. And I just see Georgia playing well on defense and allowing Georgia's offense to move the ball a little and wear the Auburn defensive front down. And ultimately, I have Georgia kind of pulling ahead in the second half and winning this game. My final score pick is going to be 23-13. And that's... You know, that I know that 10 points is a lot in this game. I completely get that. But I just think it's an outlast type situation. It's going to be close going into the fourth. Georgia gets the score. Auburn doesn't. And that's the way it's going to be as far as I see it. And, you know, we'll have it covered for you because I'm interested to see that new Auburn press box. I've heard it's in the corner of the end zone, which if you've ever had to cover a game is a nightmare. You can't even see the action going away from you. But I'm interested to get down to the Plains and see what's going on. And kind of get to experience this thing because this will be their biggest home game of the season to this point. Either one of you guys have any parting shots before we get loose?
Huge game, and I mean huge.
We did. Both Kip and I both got that text from Rusty this week. Huge game. Some other language we can't share on the podcast, but huge game.
But this is a big one. This was a big one for the SEC East. The big one. You know, now Georgia's four. This is a massive, massive game. It's not as big a game as it is in Kip Adams' household, but this is a massive game on the national level.
Kip, you want to talk about that for just a second? How big is this game in your household?
Sorry, Kip.
We have not talked about that game this entire week, and we probably will not talk about it on Saturday. It's usually a two-week moratorium on discussing the outcome of this game. I have to point out that a couple years ago, this game, the second time these two teams played, I believe it, December 2nd, it was on our anniversary. That was a tough one, guys. That was a tough one. It was a good day on Dogs 247, but a tough day in the Adams household. You know, we both win, we both lose, regardless of how this game turns out in my household. But, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens and really interested in this one. But I'm not bringing it up. Hopefully none of you guys do either.
Yeah, I can't imagine being in that situation. If Georgia wins, you definitely won't be talking for a few days for sure. But listen, we've given you guys our thoughts. We've given you guys our picks. We'd appreciate it if you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. And that's wherever you listen to your podcast, iTunes, wherever, Stitcher. We'd appreciate that. But for this episode of the Junkyard Dogcast, I'm Jake Rowe with Dogs 24/7. They're Kip Adams and Rusty Mansell, also of Dogs 24/7. And this has been the Junkyard Dogcast. Take it easy.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.